Hello everybody, this is Osho Radio. We make a program with music from the world of Osho and a part of a discourse by Osho on different subjects. You can find all our programs on the website oshoradio.net. Today we have a discourse by Osho talking about the inner and the outer, how to live it, how to experience it, and how the two are related. The music goes together with the discourse and is made by lovers from Osho from different countries in the world. Just sit back and relax and enjoy this 1 hour just for you. The discourse today is from the series The Art of Dying, number 9. Osho is talking about objectivity and subjectivity. There is a world of things, the outside world, and there is a world of feeling, of personal thoughts, of experiences that only you can watch and explore. Osho reminds us that through creativity we can explore our own inner world. The full discourse you can find and download from oshoworld.com. Just go to Audio Discourses on their website and look for The Art of Dying, number 9.
It's the real home.
In life, there are three things. One, the objective world, the world of things. Everybody is able to see that. We are naturally capable of seeing the objective world. But this is only the beginning of the journey. Many have stopped there and they think they have arrived home. Of course they have not arrived, so they are miserable. Beyond the objective is the opening of another world, the world of the subjective. The objective is the world of things, objects. The objective is the world of science, mathematics, physics, chemistry. The objective is very clear because naturally we are born perfectly able to see the objective. The subjective has to be explored. Nobody is born with the vision of the subjective. The subjective has to be explored. One has to learn what it is. One has to taste it by and by and move into it by and by. The world of music, poetry, art, the world of any creativity is the world of the subjective. The man who starts moving inwards becomes more poetic, more aesthetic. He has a different aroma around him, a different aura. The scientist lives with the things. The poet lives with persons. The scientist is not at all aware who he is. He is simply aware about what surrounds him. He may be able to know about the moon and about the Mars and about the stars far, far away. But he is completely oblivious of his own inwardness. In fact, the more he becomes concerned with faraway things, the more and more he becomes oblivious of himself. He remains almost in a sort of sleep about himself. The poet, the painter, the dancer, the musician, they are closer home. They live in the subjective. They know they are persons. And when you know you are a person, suddenly you become capable of looking into persons. For a poet, even a tree is a person. Even animals are people. For a scientist, even a man, a woman is nothing but an object. He looks at a man also as if he is just an object. He is not aware of his own inwardness, how he can be aware of the inwardness of the other. When I use the word person, I mean that there is an insight to it, which is not available to the outside observation, analysis, dissection. There is a rock, it has no insight. You can break it. You can see everywhere. If you break a rock, nothing is disturbed, nothing is destroyed. Even if it is in pieces, it is the same rock. But you break a person, something of tremendous value immediately disappears. Now you are left with a dead body. And the dead body is not the person. The rock broken is still the same rock. But a person broken is no more the same person. In fact, the person broken is not a person at all. On the dissection table of a surgeon, you are not a person. Only when a poet touches you and holds your hand, you become a person. That's why people hanker for love. The reason for the hankering for love is nothing but this, that you would like somebody to see that you are a person, not a thing. You go to the dentist, he is not worried about you. He is simply interested into your teeth. Even if I go to the dentist, I see him, what a miracle. He is not interested in me, he just looks. I am there sitting in his chair. He is completely oblivious of me. A great space is available just in his room. But he will not look even at me. That's not his concern. He is only interested in the teeth, in his own technique. His knowledge of the objective world is his only world. People hanker for love because only love can make you a person. Only love can reveal your inwardness to you. Only love can make you feel that you are not just that which looks from the outside. You are something more. You are something totally different than you look. The reflection in the mirror is not your totality. The reflection in the mirror is just a reflection of your surface, not about your depth. It says nothing about your depth. When you come to a scientist or a person who is absolutely absorbed with the objective dimension, he looks at you as if you are just the reflection in the mirror. He does not look at you. He looks around you. His approach is not direct. His approach is not intimate. And you feel something is missing. He is mistreating you. Because he is not accepting your personality. He is treating you as if you are a thing. He is doing things, but he is not touching you at all. You remain almost non-existential to him. And unless somebody touches you with love, looks at you with love, your own inwardness remains unfulfilled, unrecognized. That's the need to be needed. The subjective is the dimension, inward dimension of poetry, song, dance, music, of art. It is better than the scientific because it is deeper. It is better than the objective because it is closer home. It is not yet the dimension of religion, remember. There are many people whose mind is obsessed with the objective. When they think about God, God also becomes an object. Then God is also outside. Ask a Christian, where is God? And he will look upwards. Somewhere in the sky, but outside. When you ask a person, where is God? And he looks somewhere else than within himself, then he belongs to the non-religious dimension. People ask, what is the proof of God? Proofs are needed only for a thing. God is not a proof, needs not a proof. If I love you, what is the proof? For poetry, there is no proof. For chemistry there is, but poetry exists. And the world without chemistry will not be very much worse, but a world without poetry will not be a human world at all. Poetry brings meaning to life. The unproved brings meaning to life. The proved at the most makes you comfortable. God is not an object and cannot be proved. God is more like music. It exists. Certainly it exists. But there is no way to grab it. You cannot have it in your fist. You cannot lock it into your treasury. There is no way. Love exists, but you cannot purchase it. If you try to purchase, you belong to the objective dimension and you are killing love. That's why possession is destructive. If you possess a woman, you say, she is my wife and I possess her, then she is no more a person. You have reduced her to be a thing and she will never be able to forgive you. No wife has ever been able to forgive the husband. No husband has ever been able to forgive his wife, because both have reduced each other into things. A husband is a thing, a wife is a thing. And when you become a thing, you become ugly. You lose freedom. You lose inwardness. You lose poetry. You lose romance. You lose meaning. You become simply a thing in the world of things. Utility is there. But who lives for utility? Utility can never be satisfying. You are being used, how it can be satisfying? Whenever you feel you are being used, you feel offended, and you should feel offended, because it is a crime to use somebody, and it is a crime to allow somebody to use you. It is a crime against God. But there are people who try to use God also. When you go and you pray for something, you are trying to use God. You don't know what prayer is. You don't know what love is. You don't know what poetry is. You don't know the subjective realm at all. Your prayer, if it has a motivation in it, a desire in it, is ugly. But we find we are very cunning people. We find ways and means. Let me tell you one anecdote. A minister, a priest and a rabbi were discussing how they divined what part of the collection money each retained for personal needs and what part was turned into their respective institutions. "I draw a line," said the minister, "on the floor. All the money I toss in the air. What lands to the right of the line I keep. To the left of the line is the Lord's." The priest nodded, saying, "My system is essentially the same, only I use a circle. What lands inside is mine, outside is his." The rabbi smiled and said, "I do the same thing. I toss all the money into the air, and whatever God grabs is his." We go on playing even tricks with God. In fact, God is also our invention, a very cunning invention. It is also somewhere there. You can pray to Him. You can ask things from Him. you can find security in him, consolation, comfort in him. It is a security measure, a sort of otherworldly bank balance. But it remains an object. God is not an object. That's why Mohammedans, Christians, Jews have all tried not to make any image of God. That's very symbolic and meaningful. Because when you make an image of God, it becomes objective. Let God remain without any image. But it has remained only in the theology. Whether you have made an image of God or not, it makes no difference. Your mind, if it is just capable of moving in the objective dimension, will treat God as an object. Even a Mohammedan turns for his prayers towards Mecca, that becomes the image. Even a Mohammedan goes to Mecca to kiss the stone, that becomes the image. The black stone of Mecca is the most kissed stone. But whether you make an image of God or not, if the mind is objective, your idea of God will be objective. Suddenly when you think of God, you start thinking of high heaven, the uppermost boundary of the sky. There God is. For a truly religious person, if you ask where God is, he will close his eyes and go inwards. There God is. Here, inwards, your own being is divine. Unless God is immanent, unless God is immersed in your being, you are carrying an image. Whether you have made an image of wood or a stone does not matter. You can make an image with thinking, thought, idea. That too is an image of a subtler material, but is still an image. Man remains the same unless he changes his dimension. There is somebody who is an atheist who says there is no God. Because he says, I cannot see. Show me and I will believe. And someday, he comes to have some experience, a vision, a dream, in which he sees God standing. And then he starts believing. In Gita, Arjuna, Krishna's disciple, goes on asking again and again that you go on talking about him, but I cannot believe unless I see. Now what he is saying, let God be objective, then I will believe. And Krishna concedes to his desire. I am not happy with it. Because to concede with this desire means to concede that the objective dimension is capable of knowing God. The story says, then Krishna revealed his reality, his vastness. He revealed God. Arjuna started trembling and shaking. He said, stop, enough, I have seen. Because he saw Krishna expanding and becoming the whole universe. And in Krishna, stars moving and sun rising and moon and planets and the beginning of the world and the end of the world and all life and all death. And it was too much. He could not bear it. He said, stop. And then he came to believe. But this belief does not change the object. If this belief does not change the objective dimension. He was not believing because he could not see. Now he has seen, so he believes. But the God remains in the objective world. The God remains a thing. I'm not happy with Krishna that he did it. It should not be done. It is conceding to a foolish disciple's desire. The disciple needs to be changed from his dimension. He should be made more subjective. We go on changing forms, but we remain the same. I have heard the funeral was over. Still sobbing, Goldberg, the new widower, followed his late wife, sister-in-law, into the waiting limousine. As the big car passed through the cemetery gates, the sister-in-law was horrified by Goldberg's hand, which was slowly but passionately creeping up her leg. Her body still, racked with sobs of bereavement, she screamed, "Goldberg, you fiend, you monster, you animal, my sister is not yet cold in her grave. What is the matter with you?" In a voice shaking with emotion, Goldberg replied, "In my grief, do I know what I am doing?" People remain the same in their grief or in their other moods, they remain the same. Because the grief is yours, you don't change the dimension. So this is the first thing to understand, that you need a shift from the objective to the subjective. Meditate more and more with closed eyes about your emotions, about your thoughts. Look deeper into the inner world, the world that is absolutely private to you. The objective is public, the subjective is private. You cannot invite anybody into your dreams. It is not possible. You cannot say to your friend that tonight come into my dream. Because the dream is absolutely yours. You cannot even invite your beloved who may be sleeping just on the same bed and just by the side of her. Hand in hand you may be sleeping, but you dream your dreams, she dreams her dreams. Dreams are private. The subjective is the private. The objective is the public. The objective is the marketplace. So many people can watch one thing, but so many people cannot watch one thought, only one person. The person to whom the thought belongs can watch it. Remove your consciousness more and more to the private. The poet lives a private life. The politician lives a public life. Mahatma Gandhi used to say that I don't have any private life. That means he must have had a very poor life. A private life is a rich life. The politician's life is just there to be watched by everybody on the TV, in the newspaper, on the streets, in the crowds. The politician has only a public face. When he goes home, he is nobody. He loses all face. You have to find out your private face. The emphasis should be more on the private than on the public. And you should start learning how to love the private. Because the private is the door to God. The public is the door to science, but not to religion, not to God. The public is the door towards arithmetic, calculation, but it is not the door to ecstasy, to love. And enjoy things which are very private. Music, poetry, painting, something that is absolutely private. Something that you live from the in towards the out. You have heard it said again and again, God created the world. I say you one thing more. Whenever you create something, you become a small God in your own right. If God is the creator, then to be creative is the only way to reach Him. When the painter is lost in his painting, when the dancer has dissolved into his dance, when a singer has forgotten who he is and only the song throbs, there is the real attainment. In the outside world, you depend on others. In the private life, you start becoming a master of your own. Let me insist and emphasize it, because I would like all of my sannyasins to be creative in some way. Because to me, creativity is of tremendous import. I'm not saying that you have to become a world famous painter or poet, or you have to win a Nobel Prize. Because if you have that idea, again you fall into politics. The Nobel Prize comes from the outside. It is not a real prize. The real prize comes from inwards. You all can become creators in your own ways. It does not matter whether anybody comes to know about it or not. That is absolutely unimportant. You can do something out of love. It becomes creation. You can enjoy something while you are doing it. It becomes creative. To all of my sannyasins, I would like it to be reminded again and again that be creative. Dance. And don't bother whether somebody likes your dance or not. That is not the question. If you can get dissolved into it, you are a dancer. Write poetry. No need even to show to anybody. If you enjoy, write it and burn it. Play on your flute or guitar or sitar. The subjective is the realm of all art and creativity. These are the two ordinarily chosen realms of being. The third, the really religious, is the transcendental. First is objective. The objective is the world of science. Second is subjective. The subjective is the world of art. And third is the transcendental. That which goes beyond both is neither objective nor subjective. Is neither out nor in. In which both are implied. In which both are involved, but yet it is higher than both, bigger than both, beyond the both. The subjective is closer to the transcendental than the objective. But remember, just by being subjective, you don't become religious. You have taken a step towards being religious, a very important step. But just by being subjective, you don't become religious. You can find poets who are not religious. You can find painters who are not religious. Religion is more than art, more than science. What is this third? First, you start looking into your thoughts. Drop the public world and move into the private. Look into your dreams, your thoughts, your desires, your emotions, your moods, and the climates that go on changing inside you. Year in, year out, look into it. This is the subjective. Then the last and the ultimate jump. Then by looking by and by into thoughts, start looking into the looker, the witness. One who is watching the thoughts. First move from things to thoughts and from thoughts to thinkers. Things is the world of science, thoughts is the world of art, and the thinker is the world of religion. Just go on moving inwards. The first circumference around you is of things, the second is of thoughts, and the third, the center, your very being, is nothing but consciousness. It is nothing but a witnessing. Drop things, go into thoughts, then one day thoughts also have to be dropped, and then you are left alone in your purity. Then you are left absolutely alone. In that aloneness is God. In that aloneness, for the first time, you are in the real.
Watching the clouds on the inner sky drifting by. Watching the clouds on the inner sky drifting by. Behind them is the unknown sky, and between them I see clear blue sky. Without them I fly in the endless sky. Clouds on the inner sky drifting by. Watching the clouds on the inner sky drifting by. Behind them is the unknown sky, and between them I see clear blue sky. Without them I fly in the endless sky. Watching the clouds on the inner sky drifting by. Behind them is the unknown sky, and between them I see clear blue sky. And without them I fly in the endless sky. La 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 clouds on the inner sky drifting by. Watching the clouds on the inner sky drifting by. Behind them is the unknown sky, and between them I see clear blue sky. With them I fly in the endless sky.
some chance to trust in this present time. Let the waves of love wash over you in this life.
This was Osho Radio for today. We played music by Prem Johannes at the beginning and the end of the program, Anant Richa from her CD Divine Melody, and Devakant, Insight is Forever, a beautiful song just before the discourse. After the discourse, you heard Bindu with the song Inner Sky from his CD All is One, and Ravi was playing his beautiful version of the song Waves of Love. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you for listening. Share Osho Radio with your friends and come back the next time. Take care and Namaste.